What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Fast Friday podcast on Sikkim365.com. I'm Craig Smoke, Sikkim365.com team reporter, also host of Unnecessary Roughness weekdays 12 to 3 on ESPN Central Texas, and joined as always by Sikkim365.com team and recruiting reporter, and most importantly, director of broadcasting, Grayson Grundhafer. And we come to you just a few days removed from Baylor's big bowl announcement. They will be in the Texas Bowl down in Houston, taking on Vanderbilt, so an SEC opponent for the Bears in their first postseason in a couple of years. But Grayson, how are we doing this week?
Doing good. Yeah, just great to hear the exciting news for Baylor, obviously going to a bowl game after missing last year, so that's really cool. Other than that, it's been a really exciting week. Lots about recruiting, a ton of recruiting going on, really. It's been really a joy to look at and kind of follow. It seems like spots are opening up daily, I guess, for Baylor, even though I don't know where they're coming from.
Yeah, but let's on that real quick, and here's what we're going to do today. We're going to talk the bowl game, the announcement, and we're going to talk the big injury that we found out about this week, and then we're going to get into recruiting, and we're going to do a lot of recruiting. We're going to save, obviously, some for our premium members because, hey, you're a premium member, you're going to get a little extra insight. So hopefully this encourages those of you who maybe haven't jumped all the way on board or into the deep end, so to speak, just yet, who are fans of recruiting, and here we are just a week away, less than a week away now at this point, from National Signing Day number one, which I think you can agree is the big signing day nowadays. That's less than a week away now, so this is a prime opportunity to sign up for Sikkim365.com as a premium member. And if you're on the fence, then hopefully after Grayson's done giving you all his recruiting notes, you'll be more tempted to find out even more details that we're leaving for our premium members. But yeah, man, kind of a weird deal with all of these offers going out and like 15 different guys you could write down at this moment who are holding Baylor offers and they're still actively recruiting and new names popping up. And so, to your point, I have no idea where the scholarships are coming from, and we talked briefly before the podcast started, and I was saying, well, I don't know what that means as far as guys leaving, but there's got to be some attrition. There has to be. There absolutely is no other way around filling this class the way they appear to be other than if there is some attrition. So I'm not sure if that comes from guys who maybe heart's not in it anymore, maybe just see the writing on the wall, they're not going to see the field. Maybe they're just not fits. I don't know, but there's going to have to be some clarity there at some point.
Yeah, and we've seen it. I mean, with Tony Nicholson leaving, mm-hmm. of course, during the season, and then Elijah Hall, before the season even started, he left. So maybe there's some more guys like that. Tamarcus Davis is another name of yep. a guy that just, you know, maybe his heart just wasn't in it. So
Terrence Williams, even though that was much earlier, but yeah, that was because when I saw Terrence Williams decide to transfer, I was like, okay, that's an open scholarship. So with those guys you mentioned, yeah, that's three more scholarships.
Exactly, and those are some of those guys were younger, you know, younger guys that really hadn't even tried to compete for any position or any playing time. So I'm really curious if something like that is going to happen, but it's just confusing. They put out all these new offers, and, you know, it was supposed to be 20 is, you know, a cap. You can't have any more than that. Now I think we agree 20 is kind of the minimum, I think, for this class. And now it's looking more like, I thought it was going to be 23. Now, you know, a couple days later, they put out more offers, and it's looking like 25 could be the number. It's just pretty remarkable and kind of intriguing to see how they're going to play this all out with the numbers.
Yeah, I was thinking this was going to be sort of a lackluster signing day this go-round because about this time last year, getting ready to gear up and sign that second class under Matt Rhule, and then start looking ahead at 2019, and you're right, like the average, I think, prediction size for this class was like 15 back then. And I remember thinking, like, there's no way they're only going to sign 15 guys. Like, it happens all the time across the country, especially when you've loaded up for a couple of years prior. But I just thought, man, that seems awfully low. So I thought he could approach 20, perhaps. But I'm thinking, like, maybe three more spots, you know, like 17, 18 guys. But no, it's definitely going to be more than that from the looks of it. I mean, there's just no way around it.
Yeah, for sure. And when we were saying 15, I mean, isn't that crazy to think about? They're already over that number.
Oh, yeah.
And they haven't really even scratched the surface of what this class is going to ultimately look like. I mean, there's a third of their class probably missing right now. And so I think this class might actually end up being higher rated than last year's. And people may call me crazy for that, but there's some big names out there with some pretty high ratings, if you know people believe in the stars, that could come into the fold and could boost this class ranking up a little bit. I haven't done any of the, you know, the research on it, how high they would get if they got, you know, certain guys or whatever. But it's going to be a really fun class to follow, and it's going to be a really good one.
Yeah, we'll get into some recruiting on the episode today. We'll have your mailbag to close things out, and this will be a little bit of a shorter episode, which is not hard considering how long we normally go each week, but especially with no game to preview, we're not going to start bowl previews right now on Vanderbilt 3 weeks out. I don't think there's enough to even carry over for 3 weeks, quite frankly, but we're going to wait on that for a couple of episodes and mostly stick to recruiting on this edition. But first things first, the bowl announcement itself, we had been talking about, you know, all the possibilities that were out there. They could have ended up in the Cheez-It Bowl in Phoenix. They could have ended up in the Texas Bowl in Houston. They could have ended up a variety of different places, just depending on what those bowl committees, you know, wanted to do. But ultimately learned the news that they are going to stay in the state of Texas, and they're going to be down in Houston at the Texas Bowl. And they will be squaring off with SEC opponent Vanderbilt, led by Derek Mason. The Commodores coming off of a similar year to Baylor record-wise. And I think ultimately, while it's not the sexiest location, it does provide for probably the best turnout for this Baylor team, just because it's easy travel for the majority of the fan base. They got a ton of alums down in Houston. The Dallas to Houston drive isn't the most fun, but you know there will be a lot of DFW Bears that make their way south, and plus all the folks out in this area, Central Texas, East Texas, it's not that difficult. You don't have to book a plane ticket and do all that. And as far as opponent goes, I know you had thrown out A&M as a desire, or even you know two or three other teams, but I think matchup-wise, this is a pretty good matchup for the Bears, just in terms of a team that's similar at a similar stage, and it's not some opponent you walk in and you go like, oh my gosh, they're going to have to play their best game ever to win this game, which I don't think there was anybody out there, even A&M, that I would have said that about, but I think this is not a easily winnable game, but this is a winnable game, and I think it's, you know, a couple of six-win teams going at it. I think it's a nice little setup.
Yeah, and I think a lot of fans kind of got what they were wishing for. They got a team that Baylor matches up fairly well against, a team that, like you said, in a similar state right now, and you know, a team that Baylor, honestly, I'm not going to say should beat, but should be very competitive with, mm-hmm. and should give themselves a chance to win this game, and I think a lot of Baylor fans wanted that. Obviously, I had two ahead of that, which were, you know, A&M and Auburn. Obviously, would have been tougher matchups, but maybe would have given a little bit more as far as if you were to win. I feel like, you know, this is a good matchup, but it's not a premier one. It's not one where the country's going to be on notice if you win it. But it's a good one if you're able to get the win, and it's a good one if you're able to provide more momentum going into next season. And you know, a lot of people will say the win is more important, and so I'm cool with that. You know, to get to seven wins would be a heck of an achievement for this season. And like you said, Vanderbilt's a team, they were 4-6 going into their last two games. They were able to win two against Ole Miss and Tennessee, I believe, and you know, they're a team that seems like they're trying to trend in the right direction as well. So Baylor's going to be in for a fight, I think, in the Texas Bowl. But it's an intriguing matchup and one the Bears should feel, you know, fairly confident with going in.
It's definitely not sexy. It's not a sexy opponent, but they're thinking the same thing, I'm sure. Like, a Baylor? Like, we got to play Baylor? I can guarantee you that conversation has taken place a few times over on their message boards and in their community. And that's fine. I think for Baylor, you don't want too much too soon. So maybe you don't want to bite off more than you could chew in this first bowl game with Matt Rhule, and you kind of want to almost ease your way into it somewhat under the radar. So if you do finish this season at 7-6, which that's the one thing about being 6-6 in a bowl game, is the difference between being above 500 and below 500. But a below 500 record in this case would still be a massively, or maybe massively is too massive, would still be a highly successful season, but 7-6 would look a lot better than the 6-7. So I think to finish above 500 certainly is one of their goals, as it is for the other side and for the opposition and all of their staff and players. But instead of just jumping into the deep end, you stay in the state. You should have a much better turnout than, let's say, you had gone to Phoenix. You play a team that's pretty on par with you rather than going in as some massive underdog. You can get a lot of recruiting done while you're down there. And really just, I only see positives coming from this as long as they show up and just play a good game. The only negative I could really see from this is they showed up and just no-showed and got blown out by a similar team. But I don't foresee that. I think Matt Rhule made it very clear in his bowl press conference last weekend that they are taking this very seriously. I mean, this isn't like a, hey, we made a bowl and let's all celebrate and go on, adventures on our bowl trip. No, it's a game. It's a game they're preparing for, just like they prepared for the last time we saw them against Texas Tech, and they're going to be set out to win this thing. So I'm cool with it. I think the coming years are when you see the matchups that we really would get interested in, and the Auburns and the better, more exotic locations or exotic bowl games. That can come in time, but this is a nice first step for Matt Rhule and the Bears.
Yeah, and you brought up a really good point, the recruiting aspect. It also gives the players a legitimate chance to go to the bowl game. It gives a lot of players an easy route to go see the Bears, definitely better than going to Memphis or going to Phoenix, which were pretty much the only two other candidates. So
I am a little salty. Memphis would have been really cool.
Memphis would have been cool.
I've been to Phoenix enough. Yeah. I wouldn't mind going back to Phoenix, but selfishly, if I got to choose for the team, like, hey, guys, here's where you're going, according to me, then Memphis would have been my go-to. I hadn't been there before. But that's cool. Houston's a nice town.
Yeah, it is. And the Liberty Bowl actually would have been Missouri, which also would have been intriguing, you know, because that's a former Big 12 team. But
good offense.
Good offense. Yeah, it might have been a tougher matchup maybe. But, yeah, I think the recruiting aspect of this is pretty cool. The fact that, you know, you're really close to your fans. You should have way more fans than Vandy fans in the stadium. You should.
I would
hope.
I think so.
And then, you know, you can get recruits to come watch the game as well. And like you said, it's probably the most realistic chance at a win. It's probably the highest probability, I would think, of the candidates that they could have played. And so, you know, I like the matchup. I like the trend that Baylor is setting. And now I really want to see if Coach Rhule, how he prepares teams for bowl games. Because, you know, you see certain teams come out and kind of lay eggs in bowl games a lot. And so I want to see if Coach Rhule can get these guys ready in his first bowl appearance. And that'll kind of be a, I think, something to watch, you know, as it gets closer.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit of a preview of what those trips are going to look like, perhaps. Or maybe it's something where you realize, like, oh, maybe I need to tweak this for the next time around. But it is the Texas Bowl down in Houston against Vanderbilt. Derek Mason, their head coach. And again, we'll get more into the ins and outs of what they do and what their offense and defense looks like on this podcast in the coming weeks, probably in the next couple episodes. And of course, S11 will have his breakdowns, and Football Bob and everybody else. Our normal routine will remain. It'll just be a little dragged out because we don't have that quick next weekend, then the weekend after. No, it's like a month away, so a little, or less than a month now, about 3 weeks away now at this point. So good opportunity for these guys to rest up, good opportunity for them to get their finals, you know, taken care of and have a little bit of a break before getting right back to it, which they are this week. And so very cool to eventually get another media session opportunity. We're not doing that this week, but I would think maybe next week we start to get those again. If not the week after, and it'll be fun to hear what the players and Rhule and everybody else has to say about preparations for this.
Yeah, and getting ready for a bowl game. That's great. You know, we haven't gotten to hear a whole lot of quotes
from
the
season ending, or what, I guess last weekend would have been the season ending podcast if it were last year, right? So, yeah, we're getting bonus time here now with still being able to talk actual football and upcoming matchups.
Yeah, and we got to talk 6 wins this year, whereas last year
we
would have
so
only gotten to
talk 1.
I'm so
glad we didn't do this last year. All due respect to everyone, I just am so glad we didn't do it. I don't know if we could have done the 1-11 podcast. That would have been really difficult to do. 20-minute episodes maximum probably every single week.
Yeah, because we would have just been highlighting a bunch of bad losses.
Yeah,
so.
By week 10, I would have been like, O-line still stinks, this still stinks, this still stinks. They're still making these mistakes, but thankfully that was last year, not this year.
Yeah, exactly, and it's very cool that they've gotten to this point where, you know, a bowl game's realistic. 7 wins is realistic. And, you know, to go from 1 to 6 or 7 wins, I don't think people realize just how hard that is. That is quite a feat that this staff has accomplished. And, you know, now they're trying to build it off that momentum into recruiting. And I think they're seeing some benefits from making a bowl game. And, you know, one other thing of note is these extra practices are going to be awesome for those younger guys and going to give them a lot of experience that they wouldn't have had otherwise.
Yeah, that was my biggest thing about the bowl game, was not even so much just the accomplishment, not so much getting to say that you went to a bowl game. It was more so just the opportunity to have these extra weeks of practice that not everybody in the country is getting. And so I think that's just so highly important for this young team. I think it's going to be a good tool to kind of weed out maybe some guys who are on the fence. I don't mean like, you know, kicking guys out or anything, but it's like guys will have enough time, especially the younger players, to get a good idea of like, am I going to play anytime soon or not? And if I'm not, then maybe I need to start looking around. And maybe that's where some scholarships free up. But this is so early on in the bowl stage about the younger guys that I think it really will give this coaching staff and then eventually us as well a really good idea of kind of how the back end of this roster is taking shape and what the future of it is looking like as it takes shape. Just highly important for all the young players to get as many reps as they can, especially because while a lot of them did see tons of action, there's a lot of guys didn't play a snap this year. I mean, a lot of guys who didn't play in their allotted four games, or they played in a couple, or they, you know, played in four, but now they still get to go and practice. So that's highly important. And it would, for me, raise expectations a little, not as far as wins next year or anything like that, but just in terms of the way this team looks and the fact that they'll be able to have about a three-month break and then turn right around and get right back to it before that long delay of the summertime. It'll just kind of keep them in this constant routine, and that should be beneficial.
Yeah, and I mean, the best teams in the country go to a bowl every year.
Every year.
Best teams in the country go to a bowl every year. They get these extra practices every single year, and you know, that's what Baylor's striving to be. So in order to do that, you gotta qualify yourself for a bowl game. And Baylor did that, get a chance against Vanderbilt. And yeah, we're gonna probably highlight that matchup more in depth as the weeks come. But yeah, we got a lot more time to talk about that. But yeah, it's a good start, no doubt.
Yep. So let's get into some recruiting. That's gonna be the bulk of this week's edition. The 2019 class is days away, a majority of them, from signing their letters of intent, which effectively ends their recruiting cycle. It'll be on to 2020, although it's already on 2020 and 21 and 22 and in some cases 23. But while that's all already begun, 19 will become almost all the way official next Wednesday with the first signing day. And let's face it, quite frankly, the most important signing day at this point. I think signing day number two is really more so for your blue bloods that are in the mix for like five stars, who are going to commit at those all-star games, even though Baylor has one of those guys out there on the line and Jalen Ellis. That's really what that second signing day thing is going to become. It's going to be like the five stars who wait a little longer because they want the national television exposure or because they just haven't made up their minds because recruiting is a tough thing to decide upon. But here they are at 16 commits for the class of 2019. We've long talked about the, you know, Jacob Zenos and everybody that's a part of this class, but what can you tell us just as here we are a few days away from signing day one on what's going on? I guess, first of all, on just the class, how many guys are you kind of expecting? Do you think it'll be the majority of guys next Wednesday that end up signing early?
Yeah, I do. I think that most of these guys are going to sign early. I think the only one really that's in this class that may not sign early is Jalen.
Right.
And Jalen wants to wait, and he's going to wait till the Army All-American game to make his decision. And, you know, he was there this past weekend, and he loves the guys. And you see the pictures with the guys, and they really enjoy each other's company. I don't see him going anywhere. We've talked about this so many times. And, you know, I know that there are red flags with the fact that he's committing, even though he's already committed and has never decommitted, and no site has pulled him off from being a Baylor commit. So it's very strange that it's happening this way, but I think people should feel rather comfortable with it, and it'll be okay, you know, for the future. I really think he'll end up being a Bear. As far as everyone else, you know, there's a lot of early enrollees, which is great to see. So guys that will be here in January, I mean, that's big.
Yes.
You know, including your quarterback commit. And obviously, they only have two quarterbacks on campus with a scholarship once McClendon leaves. So Charlie Brewer and Gary Bohannon are the only two. Jacob will come in January, and they'll be a little bit of a battle, and hopefully they can all push each other a little bit. And if Baylor doesn't bring in a grad transfer or JUCO, then, you know, they may just be rolling with a junior.
Yeah, you know, gonna ask. Yeah. You think that they go and pursue a fourth quarterback?
you know,
I can see the reason too, and I can see the reason against it. The thing against it is you've got three. Do you need four? And to take up another scholarship, especially when we've seen now through this little experiment the last 2 years of the grad transfers, Charlie wins out. So Charlie wins out. So if I'm a grad transfer, first of all, looking at Baylor, I'm going, am I going to play over Charlie Brewer? And the answer is, unless you're really thinking good, you're probably not. So I think the market's going to be a little bit more limited when guys start to see, oh, well, Jalen McClendon went there and look what happened. And Anu Solomon went there and look what happened. But they could find somebody. There's no doubt about it. It's just, do you want to put that mix together once again? My only reason to say yes is because of just that amount of youth. The separation from Charlie's experience to then Gary and Jacob is a massive, massive hole. You're talking like 20 starts or however, it's getting close to 20 starts if it's not there already for Charlie to zero. And like three snaps for Bohannon and zero for Zeno. So yeah, there's maybe a little bit more experience that you like in that quarterback room.
Yeah, I think that they can sell something though, and that's the fact that Jalen McClendon did get to start a game or two this year. He did. I believe it was just one, but he got to play. He got to start. He got every opportunity to prove that he was the better quarterback. And to me, that's something you can definitely sell to a grad transfer on the market, just because you know that Coach Rule is going to let you compete, and you know that he's going to let you get the opportunity to potentially start. And so that's one thing I would say about that. The other thing I would say is Coach Rule always has said he wants four or five quarterbacks, scholarship quarterbacks on his roster every year. That leads me to believe that he's probably looking at it, and if the right guy comes along, he might do it. I would personally, I would want that. And the reason I want that is because I would love it if Jacob Zeno could redshirt. I think that a redshirt for a quarterback is probably one of the most important things in development. I wish Charlie Brewer had gotten to redshirt. Yeah. And, you know, I feel like that would be big for this class if he was able to redshirt, but he won't be able to if there's just three on campus. That would be really tough. You would have to have a lot of faith in Gary, which I don't know if the staff does or not.
Yeah, I have no idea. I know they're very high on him, but I don't know how much faith they have in, like, hey, guide us the entire season as a sophomore, or no, excuse me, a redshirt freshman. Yeah, I'm not sure if that's gonna be what they want, ideally, going into next year. Now, they wouldn't take a look at another high school player, do you think, would they?
Not a chance.
So no interest in, like, the Tech quarterback decommit or whatever, because I remember they at least talked to him, right? The Maverick McIver.
Yeah, they talked to him. It was quick. They talked to him as a backup plan for Zeno, right? I think. And once Zeno committed, they haven't really looked. The only quarterback that they've looked at is Peyton Powell, and they're not even looking at him as a quarterback. They're looking at him as a defensive back from Odessa Permian, and they have not even looked at a quarterback since Gunnar Cruz, the kid out of Arizona. They looked at him for a second, and then Jacob committed, and then they shut it down in that regard. And personally, I don't think they want to take another high school kid. I think that you wait and do that with 2020. If you need another guy, you take a grad transfer, I think, for quarterback at least.
You mentioned the early enrollees, Jacob Zeno. That's really important. Quaylen Jones, running back also. And that running back room should be pretty solid during the springtime with what all they have. Also looking at Hakeem Vance, which at one point in time, I think early on in his recruiting cycle, I even thought a kid from Mississippi coming all the way to Waco, Texas. I would imagine there's going to be some other pulls there at some point in time. But, I mean, he looks to be all set, and I think that's great because he's got the sort of tweener body skill set that they seem to love and then turn into something. And, you know, he's looking at linebacker safety, right? So I think he's good to get him as an early enrollee.
Yeah, and one thing I'll say about him is that after his visit, we talked a little bit, and he's all locked in. You worry about that with out-of-state kids always that have been committed this long, you know, that something may happen, but he seems all in, and he's going to early enroll. And, I mean, we're talking about a kid that's got Georgia offer, Kentucky offer, Louisville offer, Minnesota offer. Like, he's got good offers. Mm-hmm. And so very athletic, a 4.6 guy in the 40, and a guy that has the body and the frame to play multiple positions. There was someone on the board that was talking about him possibly playing middle linebacker.
Okay.
And I was kind of like, no way, no way. But if you compare him to Clay Johnston, or you compare him to Roquan Smith that played at Georgia, there are some similarities there. So I wonder if he can put on enough weight if that's something that they're looking at, I mean, we know they want to get more athletic on the defensive side of the ball, and that might be something to watch if he moves that far up. I still have him projected as a safety, safety or the nickelback position, that strong side linebacker that Blake Lynch plays.
Used to be called the Bear.
Exactly, yeah. I could see him playing either of those. Very physical, very athletic. And, yeah, he's a guy that's going to be great to get on campus so that you can figure that out. Figure out what he needs to play and what he suits best at.
Tell me if I'm wrong here, but I think the staff, especially as we saw more 3-4 at the end of the year, is starting to figure out, like, all right, we're going to have to tweak some of what we do. This part of the country, this style of football, we need to get taller, leaner, faster on defense and have more, like, more defensive backs on the field, basically. I think that they probably realized that early on, but I think that they're now starting to see, like, it's really hard to find enough quality defensive linemen for everybody to have a consistent 4-3 front. So not only is it difficult to find that in recruiting unless you're a blue blood, but just for the style of play in the Big 12, it's just sometimes better to run that three-man front and be a little bit more adaptable. So he seems like a prime candidate to fit multiple roles in a 3-4 scheme.
Yeah, he definitely could, and that's kind of going to lead me into talking about another commit that's on here, and that's Matt Jones. And the reason I want to bring him up is
because he's not early enrolling, though.
He's not. Yeah. He's not, and I don't think he's going to get playing time as a freshman, but I honestly think that out of all the guys that are committed, he might be the, I don't know if I would say the most important, because that usually goes to the quarterback, but the best fit. And the reason I say that is because this is a guy that as a sophomore had over 100 tackles at linebacker. And then he switches to defensive end, and he's got over, I think, 24 sacks in 2 years. And he plays the rush in position, but the rush in position, it is so important that you have almost a linebacker's mentality at times, because you get dropped into coverage. And you have to be able to play coverage to a certain extent while also being able to rush the passer. And to me, he is the perfect guy for that, because he's got experience at both. Mm-hmm. And I think that he's going to be very important, especially on the defensive side of the ball, to Baylor, because they don't have a guy like that. BJ is a great pass rusher, but he's never played linebacker. He's probably still learning that. You know, I bet if we ask the staff, it's probably, you know, he's still a work in progress as far as when we drop him into coverage. But, you know, a guy like Matt Jones might be able to come in eventually and provide a whole lot of big plays for the defense.
Yeah, and a guy I haven't heard a whole lot about, but just expecting him to be back next year and healthy, and I'm excited about, is Deontay Williams, after he got hurt earlier this year. So if anything, that gives him a little bit of another bridge to Matt Jones eventually. At that spot, rounding out the early enrollees, another one, TJ Franklin out of Temple, who's gone from, why do we offer him? He stinks, to, this is the best recruit in the entire class. I mean, it's been almost that extreme. I remember everybody poo-pooing all over TJ Franklin, and I sat back, and I'm not trying to give myself any credit. I just sat back and said, I'm going to watch his senior year play out. Like, Temple has dogs, man. Temple has dogs, and so I'm like, we'll see. It's early in his junior year or whatever he committed, and I'm like, we'll see. They need defensive linemen regardless, and sure enough, he turned into like one hell of a player during his senior season for the Wildcats, and was very disruptive, got in the backfield a lot, saw a lot of you know, double teams at times, and he's, I think, turned into a guy that not only did some folks think was like a wasted scholarship, but now he's got everybody, for the most part, I think, on board and excited about what he's going to bring on the D-line.
This is the perfect example of why film is not the end-all be-all, right, to every single recruit. Situation plays a huge part in it. He simply did not get a lot of playing time last year and didn't really get a huge opportunity to show what he could do. And, you know, there are certain guys that you just look at and you go, okay, how am I going to find a guy that fits what I want on defense? 6'5", 290, you're not going to find that in a really, really polished player unless they're a five-star recruit. Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to find guys that fit what you want but might be a little hidden. And he's one. And you know who's another guy that everyone just keeps talking about and raving about his film? And his film's awesome.
Can I guess? Is it Will Williams?
No. No.
People are big fans of his, though.
For sure. But I'm talking about on the defensive line.
Oh.
Harrison White has been another guy that got destroyed last year when he got offered by Baylor. And you watch him and TJ, their senior year, oh my. they're going to be an issue in the Big 12. And they, and that, you know, you talked about the 3-4. They're perfect for that. They're huge. They're massive. They're going to take up a lot of room, and they both are showing the ability to move very well, which was something that I know a lot of people were concerned about with both of their junior films, the ability to move and the ability to actually make the plays when they're there. And they've proven it, and great finds by the staff. Those are going to be two high-quality guys that you just wouldn't find unless you were really, really doing your homework.
So early enrollees on offense, you got Zeno and Quaylen Jones, and that'll be good. They'll get some feet wet and, you know, start to learn the system. But then defensively, you've got Akeem Vance, as mentioned, TJ Franklin, and then also Logan Compton out of Tomball, who is bound for the defense. And looking at defense, I mean, what is he looking at as far as next level?
See, he's an interesting one, and I just want to bring this up. If you do get on Sikkim 365 and you're a premium subscriber, I'm actually doing a daily piece where I do a scouting report for every single commit in the Baylor class. I haven't gotten to his yet, and he might be one that I wait a little bit on. And
so tune in Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly. But he's a tough one for me. I don't think he plays tight end because they just have too many tight ends. I just don't see him playing that. On defense, though, I'm interested because he rushed the passer really well when he was at camp, but I'm curious if they don't look at him at least a little bit at a linebacker position as well, other than the rush end. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to get looks at both of those positions and see if he can move well enough to play a linebacker. But I mean, 6'4", I believe he's already 220. I mean, if he just learns this scheme, he's already close to the right weight for a linebacker. If he does play rushend, I think he's plenty athletic to do that, and that'll just be a case where he's just going to have to learn and learn and learn because this was only his first year primarily playing defensive end. So it'll be an adjustment.
And the last early enrollee that'll start to hit campus here in the next few weeks, Solomon Turner, linebacker out of the Plano area, Prestonwood High School, and he was one of the first commits to this class. He committed way back in June. So he's been around for a while, and another defensive player that'll get to come in. I think even more so for the defensive players is to arrive early because of what we know is how complex Phil Snow's system is. Just, that's one extra semester of learning and being in meetings and doing all of that.
Yeah, and if you tuned in today, that's who I did the scouting report on today was Solomon Turner, another guy that just great to get him on campus. I think he's destined for defense. I personally view him as a linebacker for sure. I don't know about Mike or Will. I'm not sure on which linebacker position, but one of those two. And he played receiver a lot at Prestonwood, was awesome this year, had an amazing year at receiver. I just don't think he – I don't know. I feel like the TAPS competition is not quite the level to really evaluate that. If he comes in and shows it, maybe he plays offense, but I think you put the athleticism on defense and you let him grow and thrive. He's 6'2", 209, easily will get to 225 in a year or two, and he's going to be a very good player. Another guy that's great to get him on, get him in early, and that's another reason, you know, the staff loves getting these guys in early, and they love the fact that they've been here for 2 years now, and the players can start teaching the new guys how to do the system instead of the coaches having to teach it the whole time.
Yeah, one thing I'm excited about with this offseason coming up here in about a month from now is that then the offseason really begins, and we're going to see even more work put into trying to transform the bodies of a B.J. Thompson and a Tyquan Thornton. Those two stand out to me because I think they could be superb players who have shown flashes, but both really need to gain a lot of weight and get to their, you know, their prime form. I mean, shoot, Tyquan Thornton is just a true freshman, so I mean, can't expect him to be there already, but I think that's going to be huge for those guys. But then to also see a number of these early enrollees like a TJ Franklin or a lot of these players who are just tweeners. I mean, they're like, could play this, could play that, as we've documented or as Grayson's documented in his profiles of these guys. But to see what they can turn a Solomon Turner into and a Logan Compton into, that's going to be really fun to watch because they've got the base, I think, in a lot of these guys. It's just, can they get the system down and can they turn them into what they foresee them as? And there's no reason to believe that they can't, but it's just going to be fun to kind of follow that process a little bit. And the rest of the guys who aren't enrolling early, but everybody appears to be on board other than, you know, Jalen Ellis just waiting to do his commitment at the All-Star game, Army game
in San Antonio. Army All-American.
Game in San Antonio later this month is, there's for the guys that aren't enrolling early, there are some players who, as we talked about with the TJ Franklin, people weren't necessarily all that high on, but I mean, I'm thinking of Elijah Ellis as somebody that everybody's like, okay, well, now we're on to something. And Paris was very, very good this year, just got knocked out of the playoffs last weekend, as a matter of fact. But a guy like him won't arrive until the summer. But I think the opinion on him has definitely turned since he originally committed. And that goes for a few guys. I mean, this class is... it's been put together really for so long now that you almost kind of forget about certain, like, oh yeah, Gabe Hall's in this class, and oh yeah, this guy's in this class. But yeah, it should be fun to start seeing some ink dry next Wednesday.
Yeah, it's really cool to see what this staff has built, and the reason I say that is because you have half the class that you go, wow, these are awesome athletes. I mean, these are guys that athletically could play at a lot of places, and then you got the other half of guys where you just go, man, that's just a really good football player. That kid just knows how to play the game. And so to have a great combination of guys like that, that's huge. That's huge for this staff. And now they're going to continue to try to build on that with what they're trying to do with these official visits. Obviously, weekend one has passed. No commitments yet. We feel like they may be close on a couple
that we can tell you about. I'm just kidding. I have no insight.
But yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's pretty interesting that they weren't able to get one. It's not disappointing, but it kind of just tells you that, you know, these out-of-state kids, you know, they might be a little bit tougher to get on board and might want to take their time with the decision, which you can understand because you're leaving, you know, all the way from, most of them are from Florida all the way to Texas. So it's going to be very interesting. But once again, they got, you know, two more Florida kids coming in this weekend. Jaden Gragg and Jared Baker Jr. So trying to load up on talent. I mean, the guys that they're bringing in from Florida are super talented and guys that could really bolster this class even more than it already is.
So when it comes to last weekend and kind of the lay of the land right now, you just mentioned a couple guys that will be coming in this weekend. Another recruiting weekend, but not as large as last weekend. Kind of let us in, and certainly for those of you listening, again, that aren't premium members, we're going to have a lot more insight than what we talk about on here because, well, premium folks sign up for premium information. So if you're hearing our conversation, you're like, oh, that's interesting, I'd like to know more, well, simply go sign up, and you can, for the next month, have all the recruiting that you would like behind that paywall. But what can we offer as far as just the lay of the land and sort of your thoughts right now on the recruiting landscape?
You know, I'll just kind of talk in general about where they're at right now. They're, you know, the Sam Snyder kid from Florida, they brought in.
Big tight end,
fast tight end, really good player. Goes home from his visit. All signs indicate this is probably going to be a Baylor Bear. Pretty easily probably going to be a Baylor Bear. Then Florida State and Michigan both visit him the next day. He sets up an official with Michigan on December 15th. Gets offered by Florida State and sets up an official in January with them, and therefore he's not signing till February, which kind of throws a wrench into things because it almost makes Baylor have to either wait and just hope that you land him at the end or move on. So that's going to be a really interesting one, and especially because it's at a position that they don't need.
They got four young tight ends right now
that are really good, but it's also one of those where you look at and they may be thinking that's a best available.
Well, I mean, take Florida State out of the discussion because I don't believe in Willie Taggart, and I'm not a fan of him. Not the guy, but just as a head coach, I just don't think he's anything all that special. I don't. I think that's, you know, Charlie Strong came in and basically did the exact same thing that he had been doing, you know. But with Michigan, on the other hand, and the tight end position, if they see something in a tight end, that tells you all you need to know. Jim Harbaugh knows tight ends. It's like what was that, Zach Gentry kid who was committed to Texas a couple years back as a quarterback. Do you remember that? Out of New Mexico. He's big, it's like 6'8 quarterback, and he was UT's guy. And then here came Harbaugh. I think that was the year he got the job. And so a part of his like initial recruiting class, I guess, he came and flipped Zach Gentry. And, well, Zach Gentry made the right move because he's going to be probably playing on Sundays as a tight end for a long time in the NFL, so he definitely knows that position.
Yeah, he does.
And that would be tempting for Snyder, yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but they already have a tight end in their class. They might even have two tight ends in their class, so that's one thing to look at, and that's why when I look at it, I actually view Florida State as a bigger threat, which is, you know, kind of crazy, but they don't have a tight end in their class. They only have, I believe, I think they're at 16 commits right now, Florida State is. And so I'm just thinking about it, and I go, you know, it's in Florida. Maybe this is a school that he likes. Maybe this is his Florida school. You know, there's a couple in there. Maybe it's Miami, but Florida State's the one that offered, and it's closer to home for him. Still not that close, but, you know, I can see the appeal. It's in state. They have room. They might view him as a top priority. It might be tough.
FSU?
Yeah, FSU might.
And trust me, if you go visit Tallahassee on a game day, you'll see the appeal. It's a great atmosphere. A lot of places are, but FSU, when I went a few years back, was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm sure. And like I said, this may be more of a Baylor thing. Mm-hmm. Moving on from him eventually.
Well, yeah, because how many fish are on the line right now? And the fact that they look at the roster and they're like, where are we in dire need of something? Tight end's not probably top five on that list, I wouldn't think, with all the young guys they have, unless those guys are just massively disappointing, which the way he's talked about all four of them is not the case. So, yeah, maybe one of those just like, hey, if we get him, great, and if we don't, hey, cool, we can use that somewhere else.
Exactly, and, you know, kind of just a few more things that we can talk about a little bit. It's clear there are two positions that this staff is clearly trying to position themselves nicely on, and that is the offensive line. No surprise there. They're looking at everywhere. They're looking JUCO, grad transfer, recruit.
As they should.
Looking all over the place to try to fill that need. And the other is secondary. And like I said, there's three Florida guys coming in this weekend, and all three of them I project to the defensive side of the ball in the secondary to some extent. And, you know, it's clear that they're trying to make a move at both of those positions, trying to get better. And, you know, kind of just take it from there. I know there's another, you know, secondary guy that they're looking at, Mark Perry, who a lot of people got excited about from California. And he's another guy that's waiting till February to sign. Hasn't said he's going to take an official, but, you know, you wait till February and your spot at Baylor is probably going to be filled unless you're a five-star or unless your name's Jalen Ells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
rightfully so, I feel like, though. I mean, you gotta get to it. I think you will eventually, if you keep winning games and progressing every year, reach a point where you can sit back and wait. But right now, you're still putting together the building blocks, and it's very clear that while this year has been fun, you have to take another jump next year. And to do that, you need a better O-line, and you need better safeties, or just play from the safeties. Because I think Woods and Morgan, it's going to work out eventually, but you need better play from there. You need better play from your outside linebackers. And so, address it however you need to, but that's how you're going to get better, is improving those areas.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And they got to take steps to get there this year and not worry about trying to land. Like, I would probably say a grad transfer on the offensive line is more important than waiting for someone in, you know, February.
Like a freshman safety?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I just think if that's available, you have to take it, because that's an immediate impact mm-hmm. that you know is going to be an upgrade to some extent on your offensive line. And they're not going to win a lot of games if they don't show improvement on the offensive line. They're not going to win more than they did this year if they don't show improvement. So it's going to be very interesting to follow moving forward. But yeah, those are some of the recruiting tidbits that we've gotten. Of course, two more weekends of official visits coming up. This weekend will be fairly big. Won't be as big as the first one, but fairly big, and then the next one will be small, very small. But you know, we're trying to figure out when some guys are going to visit, and we'll have it up on Sikkim365.com. Another name that I'm looking forward to hearing when he's going to visit is Trevius Hodges. I know he's got another game coming up this weekend, but I'm looking forward to seeing if he does end up taking a trip to Baylor just down the road.
Yeah, I was hoping to say something to Trevius after the Midway game on Saturday, but the situation that happened there was the game was down at Kyle Field, which was cool. I know not a lot of Aggie love on the site, but I'm just a history fan, and so I had been to Kyle Field a couple times before, but it had been like 15 years, dude. Been like, even with all the high school games I cover.
That's a great venue.
All the places that it takes you. Like, I've been to AT&T a billion times. I've been a lot of different places a billion times. I had not been to Kyle Field in forever. And it was funny because you go out there and the first thing that dawned on me, although really the elevator tipped you off, on the elevator to the press box, they had the LSU game on a week after the fact, right? And so go out on the field, and I saw that, but I really wasn't thinking too much about it. And then I realized when I saw the field condition of like, oh, yeah, they just played 7 overtimes on this field a week ago. And because their season here is over, they're not in any rush to go fix this natural grass. So it was not like dangerous conditions, but it was definitely beat up. And apparently Travius turned his ankle or whatever, or, you know, twisted something on like the first play of the game. And he was out the rest of the way, did not return to the game. Yeah, he was out the whole way. He was on the trainer's table for like the entire first half, getting looked on. He'd get off, he'd run around, go back on the trainer's table, get off, go look around a little bit. So he got dinged up. He's going to be fine to play this week against Allen, and they will most definitely need him against their former head coach, Terry Gamble. But yeah, in that massive comeback last week, Midway was down 24-0. They had Travius Hodges for the first play of the game, and that was it.
What a coaching job.
Holy cow. Oh, no kidding, man.
Oh, my gosh, because I saw they were down big. I assumed.
You know who replaced him?
Who?
David Wetzel's son.
Wow.
Chase, yeah.
Wow, that is big. That's great to hear. I mean, you know, it's bad for Hodges, of course, but man, that is a resilient bunch. I'm telling you, I went and saw them play Temple. Mm-hmm. Resilient there, even more resilient in that game. That's unbelievable to hear about, because, you know, when I went and watched them versus Temple, Hodges was all over the place. Yeah. They wouldn't have won that game without him, no, that's for sure.
No, and it looked like they were not going to win that game. Again, down 24-0 at halftime, came back out and outscored Klein Oak 28-3 or 27-3. I forget what the final score was. Regardless, it was it would have been 28-3. They outscored them in the second half, 128-27. Yeah, that's right. So it was incredible to watch. But yeah, they had no Hodges the entire game. And I was going to ask him, like, after the game, like, hey, man, just ask a couple questions about his plans. But he vanished at halftime. I don't know if he went and watched it in the stands or whatever. But yeah, he was a no-go that whole way. He will play this week against Allen. But if I get the opportunity, I'm at least try to gauge his interest a little bit. He's kind of quiet, and I'm not sure what he's planning on, but the last I had heard, he was planning on visiting. So good chance their season ends this weekend. I mean, it's Allen after all. Good chance it may not, but if it does end, then you would think that pretty quickly he would turn around and want to go visit.
Yeah, for sure, to figure out where he's going next. Mm-hmm. Definitely. One name I want to mention, because I know you went to the game and I know you've seen them play quite a bit, but one name that continues to emerge, and I think he had a touchdown this weekend as well, as Will Nixon. Yeah. That kid is starting to really pick it up a little bit at the receiver position. What can you tell me about him?
He was dinged up too in that game. He had a little bit of a limp, but he just played through it, and he is a really good football player. I mean, Matt Rhule says all the time he wants good football players. Will's just a really good football player, and what I'm seeing from him this year is not necessarily what I'm going to see from him next year, because he's ideally going to take over the starting running back job from James Fulbright when Fulbright graduates, and he only needs one more touchdown to break the Midway school record for touchdowns in a career. So that's the kind of impact he's had since he was a true freshman. So yeah, Will will take over for him, but as a slot receiver, he's had a knack over the last few weeks for, even if he's only making a couple of catches a game, one's always a big one. And he started to find more of his footing, I think, once he gets the ball in his hands, of kind of going and making a play afterwards. And that's one of the things he did on Saturday. He got open, had some free space, and had a couple guys to get around, and he did. He's got good moves. He's got pretty good speed. He's got good size to build off of. So, yeah, I'm excited about him. I think that I haven't talked to Will at all about recruiting because he's just a junior, but I would think that's probably a guy they're going to land. And I think he's a good piece. I think he's a good kind of Swiss Army knife type of guy to build around. As we know, as we've been talking about, they love those types of guys.
Yeah, and I talked to him originally, and he told me he was actually feeling the slot receiver position right now. So
hey,
I'm curious.
Hey, if he does that, then that's cool. I just don't know who Midway has in line after him.
He might have to.
He might have to, but there may be some kid on the JV I don't know about right now. That's entirely possible.
Midway finds guys.
Yeah. Have him down there because they're not getting carries from Fulbright. So if you're going to play and be the next running back, you're probably on JV right now. So, I could see him sticking there, though, because he has turned into a heck of a player. And I don't think he's going to be like some 4-star or anything like that, but I think they got him a good one. So, or they haven't yet, but you know what I'm saying. I think he will be eventually. Yeah. And I think if they do land him, then they got themselves a good one. But he's got a whole nother year, which is exciting because of the strides he's already made this season.
Yeah, and that's great to hear. So they play Allen on Friday. So it'll be interesting. Saturday?
See a few D1 recruits
Saturday or
there.
Friday?
Saturday at McLean Stadium.
Yeah, that's right.
Saturday afternoon at McLean.
That'll be a good one.
Yeah, Allen fans complaining about the location. They lost a coin flip. There wasn't some grand conspiracy. Allen fans are the worst. You've got everything. and you act like there's some conspiracy. It's like Texas fans, like there's some conspiracy against you, and you don't get you. It's a location of a game. Come on.
I think they'll You're be Allen. Okay. I think they'll be all right.
They'll be just fine at McLean Stadium. Yeah. So, anyways, a lot more information and detailed information on visits and timelines and feelings over on Sikkim365.com right now in the premium section. So let's get into some mailbag questions for this week. And Grayson, go ahead and start us off here.
Okay, so the first question from SA Baylor fan. I really hate to hear the news about Jalen Hurd missing the bowl game due to the knee injury he suffered in the game against Tech. We are all well aware of how much he meant to the team, and I thank him for that. Wish him well in the NFL career and beyond. With that said, which player or players do you see stepping up to fill his role in the Texas Bowl? Could this be an opportunity to start getting our tight ends more involved in the passing game?
Well, it was unfortunate to hear that. And last week we were talking about, do you think Jalen plays in the bowl game? And I wasn't thinking about health at all. And I think if he's healthy, he absolutely plays in that game. But then we learned that he's, in fact, not just, you know, banged up, but he's actually legitimately hurt and needs surgery, as he received earlier this week. I just think it's really unfortunate, man, because they're not in this game without him. And it just feels like, yeah, we got this one full year, but it was such a brief glimpse of, I just, you know, it just would be so lovely if he was like a junior and he could come back for another year because of what he did for this team. But yeah, it's unfortunate, but it's absolutely, I put the same message up on Twitter earlier this week of Jalen Hurd absolutely lived up to the hype and surpassed it, which I thought was going to be near impossible, but he did. And he leaves a massive hole, and they're going to need a lot of guys to step up. I think we'll start to see the seeds of that in this bowl game for sure. I think it's a big opportunity for the Pooh Stricklands and some of the younger guys as well. Pooh's a veteran at this point. He'll be a senior next season, but I think he's a guy who's going to get more looks with the future of this team, and then the younger guys along the way as well. Eventually, Jared Atkinson will play next year again. But specifically, I mean, to fill that role of a Jalen Hurd, what are you thinking?
Dang, if you could only get to play in 12 games and still get a red shirt, no right? But, yeah, this was tough to hear. Jalen, we talked about it when we were given our superlatives and awards for the season. That was the MVP, consensus MVP of this team. And, I really wanted to see what he could do in a bowl game because I felt like we were kind of robbed in the Texas Tech game because he was about to get 20, 25 touches in that game, some carries at running back more than we've seen, and I feel like that would have translated right to the bowl game as well. So I feel for him. I absolutely 100% think he would have played if he was healthy. I will stand by that. That just seems like the kind of guy he is. He just wants to play. And as far as guys that can fill in for him, the bad answer is really no one can fill in to exactly what he does. It's unfortunate to say that, but it's true.
No, it's true, because Pooh Strickland isn't going to go get you third and short.
No.
But hopefully by next year, you don't need your wide receiver to go get you third and a yard.
Yeah, you would hope. Yeah, absolutely.
You better, quite frankly, and so, by year three.
So I'm going to say it's kind of a combination. I think that getting Jamichael back will be big, so you can have Lovett or Jamichael, depending on who they decide as that third and one guy, that fourth and one guy, because you're going to have one or two in this game where you got to go pick up a fourth down. So hopefully one of them can step up and hang on to the football and get big first downs or get in the end zone like that. So that's the first part of it. The second part is that receiver position. And I do agree. I think Pooh Strickland is definitely a candidate for that role in this game. I think Josh Fleeks is another name that I think these 15 practices once again will be huge for him, and for him to come out and maybe get some of those tough catches, be able to catch short passes and maybe make someone miss and make an explosive play. I think he could be one that would be an interesting option to fill in for the yardage that you're missing with Hurd and for the ability to convert third downs. That's been his biggest thing, is Jalen Hurd gets first downs. And so if Fleeks can do that, that would be huge for this team. Of course, you know, there's obvious names on the outside that wouldn't fill in exactly his position, but like a Tyquan Thornton or a Chris Platt, their level of production going up a little bit, I think will be key as well.
Yeah, Tyquan, Pooh, who else are you looking at next year? Jared Atkinson coming back. And I know we're talking bowl game here, Fleeks, not next year, but yeah, Fleeks. I'm just looking at next year, though, too. I think the receiver room will be okay. I just think they're going to have to find other ways to get done what Jalen Hurd allowed them to get done. And I think by year three, you should be able to have an offensive line that can get you third and a yard on a regular basis. So his role won't, his entire role won't be necessary heading into next year. But yeah, unfortunate. He was a great Baylor Bear for 2 years, even though we only saw him for one. But he was here for 2 years. It just seemed like it flew by. But they're definitely better off because he was here in Waco. Let's see. Good news, Bears. Baylor staff priorities on the remaining targets. Who do they really want versus just really want? A.K.A. who will they be super sad if they don't land, and who will they be all right with if a kid chooses elsewhere?
So one guy that I just have gotten news, and it just seems like it's trending in this direction, I think they will be upset not getting him, potentially, is Brant Banks. Mm-hmm. He's one that I think they've wanted for a really long time. They were, I don't know if they were his first offer, but they were right there, being one of his first offers. And they definitely, if what I have heard does come true, then I do believe they're going to miss out on him, and I think they will definitely be upset missing that one.
Dadgum Scott Frost.
So then, yeah. So then it kind of trickles down, because if you're not going to get him, then you got to get either Isaiah Hookfin or Landon Peterson. So they both become priorities, major priorities. They'll be very upset if they don't get at least one of them. And they'll be upset not getting, you know, both, really. I mean, they would love to get both. And so there's two on the offensive line. There's a lot of names, like, really want Seth Coleman out of Florida. Really want him badly. Demarius Good, really badly want him. You know, all of those guys, I think Jaden Gregg, they really want him. I think Cecil Powell is another one, a safety from Florida that they really want. You know, another name that, just looking at, and just we've talked about him, but Sam Snyder deciding he's going to wait till February, and the staff going out and visiting him last night is kind of indicative of where I think they are. I think they still want him mm-hmm. badly, and I think if they don't get him, they're going to be a little upset about it. I really do.
Yeah, when all of a sudden FSU and Michigan come calling because they take notice of him as well, you're like, we've been putting in all this work.
Yeah, and you don't make a return trip to Florida just to go have some giggles. You know, you're going to try to land him and try to woo him again.
Does Evan Cooper have his own private Florida jet just for trips to Florida?
Want to know something even crazier?
What?
It wasn't even him visiting.
Who
McGuire and Jeff Nixon got on a plane and went over there and visited him, which is, again, that they haven't done that.
Right.
That just shows you how much they want that kid, and I thought that was really interesting to see that they were the two that went on that visit. Instead of Coach Cooper, because he's been the one in Florida mostly. I mean, I would say every single guy that is coming on an official visit, they will be upset if they don't get, like, really upset if they don't get them, to be honest. I wouldn't say that there's really want versus just, like, really want. If they want you to take an official, they really want you.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Good News Bears, for that question right there. Nate Smith, hey guys, the bowl game will bring an end to Jalen McClendon's career. Got me to think about next season and wondering if you could briefly preview, predict how you believe the quarterback room will look in 2019. And we talked about this a bit earlier, so we may have covered all of this already. But Coach Rule shown his first two seasons he likes a grad transfer on the depth chart. Do you believe his trend of grad transfers is put on hold for 19 or continues? With a number of scholarships available and needs at several other positions, I'm wondering if Brewer, Bohannon, Zeno, Hurd, and McGuire would be sufficient in the eyes of this staff. There's almost no experience there. Brewer would go down with injury. How do you believe this plays out? Thanks, guys. And Nate, thank you as always as well. And we pretty much had this conversation earlier on grad transfers and the gap that will be there if they don't take a guy with some experience.
Yeah, so as far as what it will look like, in my opinion,
Brewer, Bohannon, and Zeno.
Yeah, right? And because we haven't even heard a name of a grad transfer, even though that typically does take a little bit longer to figure out a grad transfer at quarterback. It's what it's looking like, just those three, and I know that the staff probably won't feel exactly 100% comfortable with that.
I wouldn't think so. But as we know, there can always be late additions in the spring, you know, heading into the summertime. Things always happen. You know, there's always attrition in the springtime as well. So maybe if they don't address it right now, they address it later, like in a couple months. I'm not saying like May, because that doesn't really help them all that much, but yeah, there's still some time for that, I think.
I think the more interesting question is what's going to happen 2020? What's going to happen 2021, you know, with this quarterback room, mm-hmm. especially 2020, because you would think it's just Charlie, but I'm really curious to see if Gary or Jacob push him. a little bit.
I hope so.
Yeah, no, but I mean really push him, right. Like almost take the job. Like
Charlie might
pushing
not
him.
Start as a senior.
Yeah, which would be unbelievably crazy, but...
Would stink for him, but everybody else would be like, heck yeah.
I mean, if someone's better than Charlie by the time he's a senior, then wow, I mean, that's a good team.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. So that would be kind of a downer and an upper at the same time if it works out that way. But yeah, we're still a year away from that. But as of right now, that's just kind of where the quarterback situation is. A lot of young guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks for the question, Nate Smith, a regular listener there, Nate
yes.
Smith.
All year long, thank you.
Yeah. Mate. Yankee Bear, what are the coaching staff's goals when it comes to bowl games? Is it to get extra wins at all costs? Is it to get redshirt guys playing time who still have eligibility? Is it to play the seniors as much as possible or possibly some combination of motives?
I think it's everything. Not win at all costs. I definitely believe they want to win this game, though. I mean, they want to win this game. I just think of it all costs differently. So, you know, I don't think they're going to hire like somebody to like go cap the quarterback for Vandy before the game's played. But yeah, they want to win this game, and they want to get a lot of work in with the younger players. Like the start of bowl practices will be mostly freshmen, sophomores, guys who haven't played a ton, or guys who maybe played in their four games or less that they can get more out of. And then the ones will obviously start to, and maybe even perhaps are by now, starting to get more of the reps like a normal routine, because it is about them before it is about the younger guys. But there will be a large amount of time placed on the younger players getting reps they normally wouldn't be able to get. Winning the bowl game is important. And I don't think there's any idea in their mind of like, let's play all the seniors. I think if the opportunity presents itself, you hope you played really well, and there is an opportunity at the end of a game to place some seniors who maybe haven't seen the field a ton out there on the field. That would be your ideal scenario, but they're not going to force feed seniors into the lineup just because this may be the, or this is their last game. I don't see that.
Yeah, and I would say as far as, you know, the redshirt guys playing time who still have eligibility, I think that is going to come through the practices. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to force guys to be out there playing just to force them out there playing. They're going to stick to a game plan, and they're going to try to win this game. That's period what's going to happen. And yes, maybe at the end you throw another senior in to, you know, maybe go out and run a play or something if they haven't gotten to play a lot. But yeah, period, they want to go out, win this game. They're going to have a game plan. They're going to follow that game plan. The young guys are going to get all their reps during practice. If they prove it, they'll put them out there to play, but they're not going to force, you know, young guys to go out and play. Like, that's in their mind, this is all about winning.
Yeah.
And that's what it should be.
Yep. It's all about winning this bowl game. So, combination of things in a way, but ultimately, it's just the same goal as during a regular season week. They just have a lot longer of a way in between. From an effort standpoint, how does the Baylor coaching staff compare to others in conference when it comes to recruiting, Grayson?
I would say that okay, I'm going to break it into tiers a little bit. The top schools in the country, in my mind, don't have to work as hard in recruiting from the standpoint of they don't have to go out and find the smaller hidden gems. Mm-hmm. Their effort comes in where they got to consistently go visit the same guy a million times because they're trying to get land a five-star guy. That's where the difference is between the top tiers. I view Baylor.
I'd say there's the other difference of Oklahoma doesn't have to tell you who they are or let you know.
True.
Like, oh, so tell me about Waco and Baylor and all, like. In the state of Texas, that's probably not an issue, but in Florida, I can tell you right now, Baylor coach and Oklahoma coach walk in, he probably knows who Lincoln Riley is, and he's probably wondering who Matt Rhule is and where he's from. I mean, you know, for a five-star Florida kid, that's probably the way that it is. So I think if the smaller school in Baylor, you got to work, again, that much harder.
You hear Bama, you automatically know.
You
associate winning. You associate this program with it. So to overcome that, in my mind, means you're having to work harder. Now, as far as teams on the same level as you that I've seen recruiting and things like that, I would say that Baylor does a really good job of recruiting nationally. And I would say a lot of teams, especially in the state of Texas, don't do that to the same level. You know, you look at A&M as a team that now that they've got Jimbo, they've started to expand a little bit more, and they're going into Florida, they're going into Pennsylvania, you know, trying to find these guys. And you know, Baylor doing that is not really something like TCU usually does it in Louisiana. They don't go.
And so does A&M. They're big in Louisiana.
A&M is as well. But Baylor is kind of finding a niche, I think, you know, compared to the other schools, at least in the surrounding area, you know, with the Florida and the and the Pennsylvania type thing. West Virginia is unique because of their location. They've actually recruited Florida really well. So they put in the effort there. But I would say that Baylor probably ranks pretty high up there as far as a team that does as much, you know, national recruiting as they do for a team that's in a huge recruiting area. It just, you don't see it that often.
I think they play a little above their heads nationally, quite frankly. And that was something that I know a lot of people, when the ball was rolling real fast and hard and the end was never even a thought. Like, it just felt like they're just going to go win 10 games every year forever and ever and win national champs and all that. I know a lot of people back in the day on the old site were, you know, we're going to recruit nationally more. And, like, they'd throw out the one offer to a kid from, like, Oklahoma and be like, oh, we're going national. And that was about the extent of it. Like, they really didn't put a ton of effort into that, whereas this staff is big time in terms of effort and going after guys that, quite frankly, like, maybe Baylor coaches of old, and I'm not speaking about, like, just Art in particular, or anybody in particular, maybe you thought, like, oh, what a waste of time that is. Whereas they're like, nope, we're going to go out there and pursue. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think there's any thought in their mind of, like, oh, that's a waste of a plane trip. He's not going to come here. They're still going out and, like, hey, throw our hat in the ring and see what happens.
Well, and that's why it's so big to have a staff that's so diverse. Yeah. You know, to have a guy like Evan Cooper that has connections in Florida, have Coach Rule and Coach Fran that have great connections in the Northeast, and then to have Sean Bell, Joey McGuire, David Wetzel, guys like that that know Texas, mm-hmm. can recruit Texas as well. They have such a good blend, and that's not something that you see at a lot of schools, but it allows Baylor to bring in guys that they didn't used to bring in, and that's exactly why the recruiting's been so good, honestly, because some of their top guys have been out-of-state dudes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the way it is, and we'll see if it continues, but it sure looks like it's going to this year.
Do you like the approach they take? What might you do differently, if anything?
I love the approach they take because I think you're foolish if you think that you're only going to win if you just recruit Texas guys. You're a fool if you just don't take the opportunity to at least go look around, and if you can upgrade somewhere from another state, you have to do it. So I love that they do that. As far as, you know, some of the other approaches they take, I love how important athleticism is to this staff. They look at the Spark scores. They evaluate, you know, how athletic a kid is. I think that's important. But the most important thing that I love that this staff does, and we saw it time and time again during the summer, was, you know, Matt Jones comes on a comes to a camp, impresses. Logan Compton comes to a camp, impresses. Will Williams comes to a camp, impresses. Same with Solomon Turner. Each time they came to a camp, saw these guys in person that they put the time to invest in, and then these guys came and visited at their camp, they received an offer the day of. I love that. I love they trust what they see on film, but even more so, they trust what they see in person, and that's huge in my opinion.
Final question for this week. Stifler's mom will be in Waco next weekend watching my daughter graduate. Can't wait. My son is still an undergrad at BU and tells me Captain Billy Whizbangs has the best burger in town. Would you both agree? I'd say no. I like Captain Billy Whizbangs okay, but gotta go to Butch Henry here for the Double R. Old-fashioned hamburgers. I'm a big fan of Double R. I'd highly recommend them. And I'm not like a big – I feel like almost every sports media guy is like a hip-hop connoisseur or a Springsteen connoisseur, or like know everything about everything, especially like food. And I'm not one of those foodies. I love it. I'm not a big, like, here's the spot for this and here's the spot for this. But I will tell you, I would prefer Double R over Captain Billy's. And that's just the first place I thought of as far as burgers go.
Yeah, I like Health Camp. I'm a big Health Camp guy. I don't know what it is, but an old school little tiny restaurant with great food, it just doesn't get much better than that for me. I've always loved Health Camp. So, but I have been to Captain Billy Whizbangs, and it's very good
too. It is very good. Yeah. So, like, by all means, go there and enjoy yourself. But I think there's a couple good options. Mm-hmm. Any of the three places that we mentioned are pretty good to go to. And anybody who's got a better recommendation, because I can guarantee there are some.
I've heard Key Talks. I've never been, but I've heard that as another one. So there's a ton of options. And then the last question, my question, I'm very curious how these end of recruiting cycle offers and acceptances work. It's a nice problem to have with more kids wanting to commit that you have open spots, but it must be murder on the staff juggling all the possibilities. Some kids will undoubtedly be disappointed, no? Does this staff shoot straight with them, like you can only commit if this happens, etc.? What do you think?
I don't know that they're sitting there saying, like, hey, we're offering you, but you can't commit unless Derek Smith doesn't, you know, come here for. I think that'd be kind of a bad way of going about things, because that's, if the kid's got any brains at all, he's like, oh, so I'm a backup option. So I don't think you handle it that way. It's very hard on the staff. I mean, I'm sure they're crunching numbers every hour on the hour trying to figure out, like, how can we squeeze this player in if we can get him, or how do we, you know, figure out numbers-wise how this will be able to happen. Yeah, kids will undoubtedly be disappointed, but that's just life. That's not getting the job you want. That's not getting the offer you want. That's not getting the girl you want. That's just part of life, man. And they for most of them, they got other offers, so there's at least that backup plan, but that's part of the deal.
Yeah, I'm betting the conversation goes something like they talk to a kid about how they see them in the future, how they see them progressing, what role they see them fitting in. And I think some of those conversations, maybe they say, you know, it may take you a couple years before you see the field. And that may be a way of maybe trying to, you know, keep them on the edge a little bit. I could see that happening. Absolutely. You know, you're going to tell the one thing about this staff that I love is how truthful every single parent has said that they are. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're 100% with the kids as well. They're not going to tell them just what they want to hear. And, you know, some recruits won't love that, and other recruits will love that. And I don't think that they have a set in stone, like, you know, especially at this point where they still have some open spots and some leeway. I don't think they're sitting there telling a kid you can't commit if this happens. I don't see that, especially when they just offer you. Yeah, exactly.
Pull the offer. So they can't commit. I mean, that's
100%.
I hate seeing the guys commit and they're like, only to find out, and this has happened twice with Baylor over the last few years, like, oh no, you didn't really have an offer, or no, this was miscommunicated. But yeah, Stifler's mom, it's very difficult. And that's, you know, I'm not saying that you should get paid $4 million a year to break kids' hearts because you're not recruiting them, but that is a hard part of the job that not a lot of people ever consider for these guys, is the recruiting aspect and what a grind that is, because it literally never stops. As soon as this, I mean, like I said earlier, they're on to 21 and 22 and 23 offers right now, and 19 hasn't even signed yet. So it's like it never quits. But yeah, a lot of that is also, you know, having to disappoint some people when you don't offer them. So that's just goes with the territory.
Yeah, and if you want to compete at this level of football, recruiting better never stop, because you're only gonna be as good as your players are.
Mm-hmm.
And so this staff knows it, they respect that, and they're going to do everything they can to bring in the best players that they can that fit their system, and that's just what it is. And if they hurt some kids' feelings, I just don't think in the grand scheme of things it's that big of a deal.
All right, so there are the questions for this week. We really appreciate everybody and your feedback and your listening, of course, most of all. I will be back with another edition next week and start to dip our toes into the bowl game itself, but should have a lot of recruiting for you again next week, as well as we'll definitely have it with just the first National Signing Day, recapping some of the early signees. Maybe there's a surprise or two. I'm not teasing anything. I'm just saying, like, that might be something. Maybe somebody doesn't sign that we thought was going to, or does sign that we didn't think was going to. We'll find out next week.
Well, it's on the 19th.
Oh, it's 2 weeks 19, away.
2 weeks. Yeah, 2 weeks away. So 2 weeks. No, you're good. 2 weeks away is when we'll actually know. But two official visit weekends right before that. So it is coming up very quickly, right, though. Yeah.
I'm trying to get into 2019 already, as you can tell. I'm trying to skip weeks in December. Really, I'm just trying to get to Christmas. Get those presents, man. All right. That's going to do it for us this week. Again, appreciate the questions. Appreciate you listening. Spread the word. And definitely check out Sikkim365.com. all week long for the latest on this 2019 recruiting class. This has been the Fast Friday Podcast on Sikkim365.com.